Hello, I'm Niklas Sundin of Mitochondrial Sun, and you're listening to Pommesgabel, the podcast of powermetal.de.
Ja, hallo liebe Zuhörer und Zuhörerinnen. Wie ihr gerade schon gehört habt, ist dieser Podcast auch wieder mit einem wunderbaren Gast, der aus Schweden kommt. Deshalb sprechen wir diesen Podcast auf Englisch.
Nicht auf Schwedisch.
Nee, das können wir leider nicht anbieten. Ja, also bleibt gerne dabei, denn heute ist Niklas Sundin von Mitochondrial Sun bei uns im Podcast. Die sich wundern, das ist der ehemalige Gitarrist von Dark Tranquility, der solo auch sehr interessante Sachen macht und gerade ein sehr interessantes Album veröffentlicht hat. So, welcome, Niklas. How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys? And thanks for having me.
Yeah, Niklas, our podcast is called Pommesgabel, which is for, yeah, you can say metal horns in English. What do you say in Sweden for this word? Do you have something for this?
I guess we would have two things. Hornen, which is just the horns, and also hårdrockstecknet, which is the metal sign. I think it's probably depends a bit where you're from and what kind of metal culture you grew up in. But I think these days, maybe just hornen will be the one that people recognize and know. So if, for example, a Swedish band plays at a Swedish festival, they might say, visa hornen, show your horns, or upp med hornen, raise the horns. And yeah, people, of course, would know what they're supposed to do.
Okay, interesting, yeah.
And do you have a special word for the fork that you eat your fries with?
No, I never heard of that thing until you told me. But I mean, yeah, you know, you like your fries in Germany. I remember that you always get these special forks with them. And the first time I saw that, I thought, this is clever. I mean, maybe one should start importing that or make that happen in Sweden. It's quite nifty.
Yeah, currywurst pommes is a very typical German food, I think, or a meal.
Yeah, for sure.
That's right. Yeah, Niklas, please explain your band's name. What is Mitochondrial Sun? I'm very interested in the meaning of your band's name, of your project name.
The short version is that it's incredibly hard to come up with a band name these days that, first of all, sounds good, secondly, represents the music well, and also that hasn't been used by anyone else. And when I started visualizing and thinking about the debut album and what kind of basic direction I wanted to explore, I came up with the sort of space metaphor quite quickly. But I also wanted to connect it to something on a much smaller scale. And this has been a theme in Dark Tranquility lyrics for I guess forever, that you find the contrast in different things and you extrapolate from that and create some sort of interesting tension and movement. So I sort of knew that I wanted two words that would go together, but that would be the polar opposites, so to say. And mitochondrion are tiny organisms in the body, and of course sun, a star, is both located outside of the body and also being a very large object, even though our sun is not very large on a cosmological scale compared to other stars. But I started trying out some different combinations of those words, and at the end of the day I ended up with Mitochondrial Sun, which, you know, I think since the project is instrumental, I don't have so much to build upon or to that can be connected in terms of having a lyrical concept or anything. But I've always liked the idea of exploring opposites and contrasts in music. So Mitochondrial Sun is my attempt to represent that in a way that hopefully makes sense. I'm not sure if this explanation makes much sense, but it just spoke to me, I guess.
An interesting combination, because if you say Mitochondrial Sun, it has a great sound, I think.
Thank you.
But are you interested in biology because of the mitochondrion?
The basic theme of the Mitochondrial Sun albums and the band name does reflect an interest in these big questions, but at the same time, it's mainly meant to be as a sort of canvas for the music. I actually, for the Jabby album, I first planned on making things much more conceptual, in that I would, the idea was to start up with the first song representing the Big Bang, and then sort of progress through human history with every song, and end up in the far, far future. And also that I would incorporate elements from these different historical eras. So for example, if, let's say that one song would be the Stone Age song, then I would use sampled rock tools as the drum beat. But I discovered that that was more interesting as a thought experiment, and that I really should focus on just making the music as good as I could, instead of necessarily trying to shoehorn everything into this grand concept. But there are quite a lot of samples of things that are somehow related to the theme, mainly on the first album.
The style of your music is very electronical. You also have this pedal steel guitar, the electronic drums, but you also use instruments like a cello, for example. Which real instruments are involved in your music, and which parts of the music are created on the computer, so to speak?
Actually, probably more than what people think is electronic. I have to point out that it's not me playing, for example, the cello or violin. I mean, it would be fantastic to be able to do that, but I'm using session musicians for the instruments that I can't play myself. Actually, most of it is electronic in some form. Even on the latest album, I've seen a lot of reviews stating that, oh, it's great that Niklas is playing the guitar again, but actually it's all synthesizers. There are no real guitars whatsoever on the new album. That was actually one of the guidelines I had for the debut album, that I wanted to challenge myself and see if I could make music without using the guitar at all. So the first album is entirely without guitar, even when writing most of the music. And the second album is actually written on guitar, most of it. But for the sound, I thought it would help the achieving this cold, mechanical sound I was after by having keyboard guitars, or like programmed guitars instead. So to answer the question, there's actually very little, quote-unquote, real instruments on the albums. But at the same time, I really tried as good as I could as an experiment to make it sound like there are more real instruments than was the case.
Yeah, interesting. Because Pierre and I were talking about it, what instruments are real and what not. And some instruments sound very realistic.
Technology really progressed. So, I mean, if I would have tried doing this 10 years ago, it would have sounded completely horrible. It wouldn't have been possible. But these days you have a lot of developments and a lot of things approaching the level where even the more complex instruments can be performed by plugins or clever samples. I guess it's for good and bad. I mean, I can see positives and negatives about it. For a musician that wants to be creative and sort of explore different ways of achieving sound, it's a really fun development. I mean, if someone would have told me back in the 90s that I essentially could be creating almost anything I could imagine just by using a laptop, I mean, that would have been complete science fiction.
Yeah, you're right, yeah. It doesn't mean if you're creating your music on a laptop or digital, it doesn't mean that it is not emotional or connects to the listener.
I agree. I mean, it's much more about the melodies and the actual music. And in this case, I wanted to have a balance because on one hand, I wanted to fill the music with, you know, really heartwarming melodies and, you know, these big, strong emotions and atmospheres. But at the same time, for the new album, I also really wanted a cold and mechanical and very repetitive sound. I guess the main challenge behind the new album was to find a balance where it would sound very monotonous and repetitive and I guess cold, but at the same time have the actual music be filled with melodies that are, you know, with hooks that you grab the listener and that allows the listener to sort of wander around and get lost in the soundscapes.
How do you create the music? So you play it on the guitar and then you recreate it on the computer?
For the last album, which is much more riff-based, that was the basic process. I would write the riffs on the guitar, often maybe keeping them a bit more basic. So, for example, if in a Dark Tranquillity context, you usually had a lot of guitar harmonies and you layer everything in a quite complex way. But on for these songs, I wanted relatively basic guitar riffs. I wanted to limit them, so not more than 3 or 4 per song. And when I had the basic ingredients, so to say, I just used my recording software, Cubase, to sort of try different arrangements out. And often there was also the case where I knew that I wanted the guitars to be doing the same thing for 2 or 3 minutes to get this sort of repetitive, almost krautrock kind of vibe. And then I would just leave room for keyboards and samples to sort of take over at that point. But the basic songwriting was quite simple, just me and the guitar and trying to make as much good riffs as possible.
Yeah, thank you. It's very interesting because when you listen to an album that a band played, then you know, okay, there were people with their instruments, playing them, recording that and putting this together. But we're not used to this kind of creating music, especially not in the metal sector yet.
It's more of a philosophical question. Of course, there have been some reactions that, oh, the drums are, they sound too programmed and it's a bit mechanical, which kind of is the point. I mean, I wanted the drums to be the complete opposite of what a human drummer would do. So, I mean, it would have been easy to make them more varied, to change the tempos, to, you know, program them in a way that they would sound a bit more like a real organic drummer. But I really wanted to do the complete opposite. But also, I mean, the way albums are made these days, that it's kind of hard to, as a listener, you can't really know for sure how the process is. Because if you're talking about more high-end metal albums, it's very common that everything is edited. You might have a drum replacement so that the snare drum you hear might be a combination of 3 or 4 different snare drums. Everything is triggered. I mean, every guitar riff might be assembled from 10 different takes and everything is moved around. So I mean, I think maybe in the 70s or 80s, what you heard on an album would be more similar to a real band playing together at the same time. But these days, it really, and I mean, I know that there are many albums, or at least some albums from big bands, where a drum machine is doing most of the drumming work as well. So it's sort of, the line is already crossed in a way.
Yeah. That's right.
But it makes totally sense that if you don't use a, so to speak, real drummer, why would you recreate this on the computer and not use the possibilities that you have with the software?
When it comes to drum machines in metal, the times where it really works is where you sort of allow it to sound like a drum machine. For example, there was this Norwegian black metal band called Mysticum that had a drum machine with a very almost trance-like techno atmosphere. And the French project Blutas Nord as well had drum machines on, just to get this robotic sound. I think where it doesn't work is when you try your best to make the drum computer sound like a human, because it rarely will be completely perfect. And then you hit this sort of uncanny valley where it sounds like someone just has been trying a bit too hard to make it sound organic.
Mm. Yeah.
Right. Since Jakob is a drummer, yes. What do you think about drum machines, Jakob?
I mean, Niklas, you already told how metal albums are recorded nowadays. I totally agree. Yeah, there is a lot of things in the background that the listener doesn't know.
I do think that the situation has got a bit, if you want to call it better, the past years, because there are quite a lot of bands also that are doing it in a more organic way. And same thing with the guitars and everything. I think it's a matter of, as with many other things, that people really overused the technology when it became available in the, let's say maybe 15, 20 years ago, when studios started recording digitally, meaning that it would be possible, for example, to make things tighter in by editing drums, guitars. You could move vocals and everything. And I think I remember thinking at that point that before that point, having a really tight sound on an album meant that the musicians were great. The band has spent a lot of time practicing, and it was something to achieve for. I mean, the tighter, the more perfect the music was on the album, the bigger the accomplishment was. But when everything got so easy to do on the computer, I mean, you could have a crappy drummer or crappy guitarist sound like he was much, much better, just depending on the amount of time you were willing to spend to edit. And I think from that perspective, a lot of albums from that time period just sounds very sterile and perfect, because everyone thought that, wow, we can make it super tight, so we have to do that. And then, of course, you lose that sort of human factor in it, and you lose the sense that perfection is rarely that interesting. I mean, you could have a super tight album, and that would be good, but if you try to make it too perfect, then you really lose a lot of it in the process. But I think that also created a backlash. I mean, you have a lot of retro sounding bands today. You have a lot of metal albums that really sound organic, and also that band makes a point of recording analog or recording everything live, which I think is great.
Niklas, your album with the name that I can't pronounce correctly has been released by the middle of November. How did the people respond so far to the new output?
It's called Sju Pulsarer, which I'm sure that non-Swedes can't really... it was released about a month ago digitally, and the vinyl and CD versions will be out in February. And the reason for this is that I really wanted the music to be out as soon as possible. Everything was recorded and finished, and I guess I can be quite impatient with music, so I figure that, well, if we can get the digital version out a bit faster, then that's a bonus. And of course, in these corona times, you never know about possible delays with the album pressing plants and manufacturing, so we figure that, well, we might as well get the music out, at least on Spotify and Bandcamp and all that. Response has been really good, I have to say. I think I've only seen one negative review, and the rest have been ranging from really good to great, which I wasn't sure about beforehand. I mean, I'm very, very satisfied with the album myself, but at the same time, I, of course, know that it's not the easiest music to listen to. As you say, there are a lot of melodies, there are a lot of hooks and overall atmosphere, but the percussion, the drums are just going on and on in this very hammering, repetitive manner. So, I mean, I always liked albums that did one thing, but did it really well. So the sort of spiritual inspiration or reference for this album was the Ulver album, Nattens Madrigal, A Madrigal of the Night. If you know it, it was at a time where Ulver had released his the first very folk black metal sounding album, and then the acoustic album, and signed to Central Media, and everyone was expecting, you know, a very polished and very nuanced album. And Nattens Madrigal is basically so noisy, it's so harsh that you really especially at the time, you really had to invest a lot of time as a listener to discover that there are fantastic riffs, fantastic melodies, and great arrangements, but everything is sort of compressed into this very oppressive and harsh production, which makes it much more of an artistic statement than if there would have been a polished, high-end production. And I thought with my new album that it would have been so easy to make it more balanced and to introduce more variation, just to make it a pleasant listener experience. But I really was going for the feeling where you always get nauseous by the sound. I mean, there's so much repetition that it invokes a trance-like experience, and that you wait for something new to happen. It doesn't come at first, and then when finally a change happens, it really hits you. I guess to appreciate this album, you need to enjoy electronic music, you need to enjoy repetition, like a lot of the old krautrock bands where you could, they could play the same chord for 4 minutes, and then when there's a slight change, it really makes an impact. And of course, there's a certain black metal influence as well. But I also think that with any kind of music that is just monotonous, you really have to be in the right vibe for it. I mean, if you just play it on Spotify while doing the dishes or something, I mean, you probably would think that it's, maybe it doesn't speak to you. But for example, I had a friend that played it in his headphone while he was out running and doing workouts. And then he thought this was the perfect music for that sort of sensation when you push yourself, you feel a bit like you're being chased by a hungry animal from this music. And it's not really a pleasant listening experience all the time. But yeah, response has been good.
Your self-titled debut album was released in February 2020. So there hasn't been much time between the two releases. How come you released the second album so fast after the first one?
First of all, the debut album was completely finished, I think, 1.5 years before the release. So I really took a lot of time preparing everything and picking the right record label and so on. And actually, most of the songs were finished maybe 2 years before the release. So I actually had a lot of time to create the new album. I do like this pace that you can have when it's my own project and not a full band that needs to rehearse and that goes on tours and so on. I mean, I like the idea of being productive when I can in my home studio. And then whenever I have something recorded that I think is good enough, I will just release it in the way that a lot of bands did in the 70s. I think the first five Black Sabbath albums were released in 6 years or something like that. But I mean, back then it wasn't completely strange for a band to release one album per year or even two albums in the same year. So I mean, I like the idea of being really productive in that sense.
That was going to be my next question, because in between there is also the standalone single, I'm pretty sure I can pronounce it, RCR Mons. Can we expect more singles that might be released as this kind of standalone singles?
It's possible. So I actually have a couple of songs that already are mixed and mastered and everything, but I haven't quite figured out what to do with them. Of course, these days for a lot of people, it's more about singles than full albums, but I'm quite conservative in that respect. I like to have to release songs as a package with some sort of concept. I have, I think, 7 or 8 songs finished, and I could potentially turn them into one album, but the songs are very different from each other, so it might be just a bit too shattered or unfocused to put them on the same release. So I might split them up and make 2 EPs instead, or I might just release a couple of singles. I'm not sure what the best or, you know, what approach makes the most sense. So for the RCA Mons single, For a while, I actually planned on releasing an EP with 4 songs. But then I also had the Hupusara album finished. So I had to decide which one I wanted to release first. And then Hupusara just felt more relevant and a bit more urgent. But either way, I mean, I have a lot of songs finished, and for sure they will be released, either maybe one song as a New Year's present to people, or maybe something in the beginning of the next year. But I still quite haven't decided how to do it.
And will you bring the music on stage somehow, with a show maybe?
I guess I'm a bit ambivalent. I mean, first of all, the main reason why I left Dark Tranquillity was that I was just tired of all the touring and felt that it wasn't really my place, so to say. I mean, I've even back in the day, I found touring to be not a necessary evil, but I usually got quite tired after just a week on the bus. And Dark Tranquillity is a band that tours a lot. I mean, you have 7-week tours followed by a 6-week tour followed by festivals. I mean, I do like playing live in small doses, but I also know that if it would be too frequent or too much, I wouldn't really appreciate it so much. And I think for this project, there definitely is potential to make a good live experience. But at the same time, since all the music is just me in my home studio, it would require a lot of work to make it function well on a stage and to sort of transcribe the songs and arrange them in a way that would make sense for me, for whoever other musicians I would bring along, because I don't think it would be fun to have just me with a guitar, or even worse, me with a laptop or keyboard. In that case, I would want to find at least two or three other musicians. And then I think it could be possible to do something that would be both visually and audio engaging. I envision it like using background projections like we did with Dark Tranquillity. I certainly can see the music working live if we rearrange it and try to interpret it from that angle. But at the same time, it will be an enormous amount of work to make it happen. And also, to be realistic, there would have to be some sort of demand for it as well. I mean, both albums have been getting really good reviews, but I mean, to be completely honest, it's a very small project still, and it's not like there are millions of people dying to see this on a stage as well. So I think it will sort of go hand in hand that if the project takes off and if I get maybe 10 times as many listeners, then there would be more of a demand, and then one maybe could start planning for something.
But I think, or I can imagine, it would look really cool if you are on a festival and it's nighttime, darkness, and then you have kind of cinema screen on stage with the visuals that you also have in your videos, and then the music. I think depends on the environment, so to speak.
I definitely can feel that way as well. I mean, it's easy to imagine, as you said, and it has to be dark. It has to be, I mean, obviously not on the biggest stage, but maybe in a sort of tent with a nice atmosphere. I mean, it could be a great experience, but there also are a lot of steps that need to be taken before I can get that point.
Yeah, sure. To me, it seems that the visuals are very important. For example, I visited your website, and there is this very cool kaleidoscope effect when you scroll with the mouse. Are they done by you? Because you're also a graphic designer and illustrator.
I didn't code the website as such, but all the visuals are by me. And that was one of the big ideas from the start with this project, that it should also be a visual experience. At first, I planned on doing an animated video for every song on the debut album, but I realized that would take ages, so I had to scale it down a bit. And I still have the sense that the videos I've done are good, but not fantastic, just due to the lack of time. It will be hard for me to spend 100 working hours making a really fancy animated video clip, and then, you know, the band is still on such a small scale. But for sure, the visual part is very important to this project as well.
Is there also a concept in the visuals as a whole, so that you have on both albums or on every, or for the whole project, so to speak?
Good question. I guess the artwork style is quite different between the two albums, but they're also similar in that it again has the micro-macro contrast, as we can find in the band name. So on the debut album, there are these elaborate like flower patterns which zoom in on the very small details. And also on the new album, you have this shape which sort of looks like an otherworldly cosmic object, but actually it's an extreme close-up of a sponge, like spores. So there you also have the, you know, very small scale object being placed in a setting which resembles a big cosmic environment. So I guess that has been a feature on both albums, but it's not entirely clear, or it wasn't any great thought behind it. I mean, I'm sure that the different albums will have quite different looking covers also in the future.
You're also still working as a graphic designer for Dark Tranquillity. So there seems to be still a good connection to your ex-band, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm still very much involved in the visual side of the band, and I was very happy to be able to do the artwork for a moment. Of course, everything is on hold right now, but I also be doing the live animations for the band whenever they can start playing live again, as well as a lot of t-shirt designs. So just great that I can continue to be sort of part of Dark Tranquillity, even though I haven't really been on stage with them for several years and contributed with music. But it's very nice to still be part of the family, so to speak.
How can other bands work with you if they want maybe their album cover or something else done by you?
Oh, I mean, they can just send an email. That's how most of the work comes in. I mean, it happens that people send messages on social media, but I'm just lousy at checking them. So an email is always better. So then for sure I will see it and I can respond.
Okay. And how is it working? Can I, as a band, look at your profile and, for example, buy a piece of art you made there? Or will you also do a cover artwork from new?
It's a bit of both, actually. I mean, I always have images that I have that I've made for myself. And sometimes when the deadline is too tight, I mean, it happens that the band contacts me and says that, well, we need something by next week. And then because I'm always busy and I always have a schedule of work that I need to do, so I usually can't start on a new project before 2 or 3 months or something. So it happens if someone needs an illustration urgently, I might have something already made that fits, but usually it's from scratch. I communicate with the band regarding the concept. I come up with a couple of different sketches. We sort of decide on a direction together. There are lots of different combinations.
At the end of our podcast, we always like to ask our guests what are their favorite songs at the moment, or the favorite song. So what is your favorite song at the moment, Niklas? Do you have one?
I think the best album for me this year has been an album called Rex by a Swedish band called The Vampire. It's sort of, I wouldn't say retro, but it's primal death metal done the way it sounded before the genre became super popular. So it's sort of old-fashioned sounding, but at the same time, very convincing. So the album is called Rex. I think the title track is probably the best from that album. So it will be the song called Rex from the album Rex by the band Vampire.
Thanks a lot. I will look that up. It was not planned. It is a Swedish band. And that band is called Meshuggah.
I've heard of them, yes.
You heard of them? I can imagine this. And the song is called The Hurt That Finds You First on the album Koloss.
Ah, right. Yeah. That's a good album for sure.
Yeah.
Now I feel like an outsider. My favorite song at the moment is by a band from France, which is called Gojira. We talked about this band a lot in this podcast. The song is called Stranded.
Right. No, I mean, obviously that's a really good good band as well.
So you still talk to me. That makes me very happy.
Yes, I approve.
Okay, Niklas, thank you for being our guest today.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Thanks a lot. Ja, vielen Dank, liebe Leute, dass ihr uns zugehört habt. Ich hoffe, ihr fandet das Gespräch so interessant wie wir. Und wir freuen uns, wenn ihr auch bei der nächsten Ausgabe von Pommes Gabel, dem Podcast von PowerMetal.de, dabei seid. Thanks a lot, Niklas.
Thank you. It was fun.
Thank you. Bye-bye.